Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Thanks so much.
Four, five, six, marbles. Now, I want you to read this, and I want you to enunciate every word just as if the marbles were not in your mouth. With blackest moss, the flower pots were thickly crusted, one and all. Each word clear as a bell.
With blackest moss, the flower pots, I can't.
Isaiah Higgins, are those pebbles really necessary? If they were necessary for Demosthenes, they are necessary for Eliza Doolittle. Go on, Eliza.
With blackest moss, the flower pots.
I can't understand a word, not a word. Higgins, perhaps that's poems a little too difficult for the girl. Why don't you try something simpler, like the owl and the pussycat? Oh, yes, that's a charming one. Vickery, I can't hear a word the girl's saying. What's the matter?
I swallowed one.
Oh, it doesn't matter. I got plenty more. Open your mouth. One, two.
Quit, Professor Higgins.
Hello and welcome to Book Versus Movie. This is a podcast where we usually read books that have been adapted into movies, and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. I am Margot P. of ColoniaBook.com, and this is my good friend and co-host, Margot D. of Brooklyn Fit Chick.
Hi, everyone.
So if you saw the title of today's episode, you're probably thinking, that was a book? No, it was not a book.
Right.
It was not. Since we've been in lockdown, we have been committed to bringing you a new episode every single week. I look forward to this every single week. I love that we get to check in with each other once a week at least. But in order to be able to manage that, we have to kind of broaden the scope of what we mean by book. So we're picking a lot of movies that are based on shorter literary sources a lot of the time. Not always, but we've done a few magazine articles and some novellas and short stories and a couple of plays, like the episode that we're going to do today. But before we get to that, we want to let you know, if you're new, where you can interact with us and other listeners of Book Versus Movie on the internet.
We have a very basic Facebook page. We post all the episodes there, and it's perfectly fine to like that page and ask us questions there. But if you want to be more interactive with other people, and especially if you want to toss around ideas for future episodes, and we're always looking for ideas, you can join our Facebook group. So you just type in Book vs Movie Podcast Group and ask to join. It's a private group, and seriously, we just talk about books and movies there. And people get really creative with the ideas. I think somebody was a couple of days ago was like, how about Harper Valley PTA? That was a song and it became a movie.
I know.
And I was like, ooh, maybe we might go for that. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that we're looking for. So you can follow us on Facebook. If you like Twitter, we're at Book Versus Movie. You just spell out Book Versus a Movie. We have an Instagram. Please follow us there. If you listen to the show, Book Versus Movie Podcast there. And our email is very basic, Book Versus Movie Podcast, spell that all out, at gmail.com. And just want to let you guys know, we have a new logo. We just got it a few months ago, but we have a new stack of stickers. So if you would like some Book Versus Movie stickers, let us know, send us your address, and we will drop them in the mail for you.
So I'm very excited to talk about today's play and movie, but I you know what? I keep forgetting to check if it's on Audible. I've been so bad about that lately.
Well, I listened to it on Audible. So,
did you?
Yes. And there's a couple of plays that you can get on Audible. And if you want to try out Audible and get a month's free service, just go to audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie. There's a few different versions of Pygmalion there. Some of them are of the novel, some are of the play. So go out, check out Audible. And Audible also has podcasts and all kinds of great books, like a couple of 100,000 titles there. So once again, that's audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie.
Oh, how terrific. Now, today, again, we are talking about My Fair Lady, which is based on the... Oh, I should say, the other thing we're doing for funsies is for the entire month of March, we are doing musicals, which we've never done before. We are doing Musical March.
Yes.
And
yes.
So today, we're kicking it off with My Fair Lady, which is based on the musical My Fair Lady, which is based on the play Pygmalion by George Bernard Shaw, who we were just saying before we came on the air. Complicated.
So our usual thing is we talk about the author and then we talk about the thing that's being adapted and the story behind that. And then we go straight to the movie. And sometimes we could talk an hour alone just about the author themselves. Sometimes we have absolutely no information and we just have like a birth date and a death date and that's it. Whoops. And then you have somebody like George Bernard Shaw, who lived to be 94, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lived a long life. I mean, a very interesting man. He was born in Ireland, 1850s. Think about what he, like, in his lifetime, what he's seen and the inventions that happened between 1856 and 1950.
Something.
Yeah. And he's a learned man. He lived in Dublin until I think he was around 18, 19 years old, moved to England, never lived in Ireland again. And we were saying, let me just say that the positives are in 1925, he was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for literature, and he also won an Academy Award for a screenplay. The first film version of Pygmalion, he was one of the screenwriters for that. It's available for streaming on Amazon, by the way, Amazon Prime, if you have it. So definitely check that out if you're interested. He also has some things that are kind of weird. He promoted eugenics. He's very strange. I think he's very hard to follow sometimes because he kind of goes all over the map with his belief system. Like, he's against mm-hmm. tyrants, but he was mm-hmm. really like admired Mussolini. He just kind of goes all over that map.
And he felt that there were many fine people on both sides of World War I. For example.
Exactly. And he thought it was really not a good idea to call out tyrants because it's bizarre. And then Hitler comes to power and then goes, like, well, maybe you should call out one or two. He had a lot of ideas, and then some he would give up, and then sometimes he would just change his mind altogether and then move in another direction. George Bernard Shaw sounds to be like that guy at the dinner party that knew how to fix the world if someone would let him in charge. And you're kind of like, somebody put him in a cab and get him home because I'm just done. That's me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a long life and a lot of stuff happens. And, but he was one of the most, the reason we know all these things about him is that he was such a well-respected writer and thinker,
yes, and speaker.
During a very long and very eventful, period in modern history. And so, he's most known for Pygmalion, but also Arms and the Man, Candida, The Devil's Disciple, which I saw The Devil's Disciple when I was in high school. We took a school trip to New York City and saw a bunch of Broadway shows, and I saw The Devil's Disciple at Circle in the Square. Remember it very well.
Is it The Devil's Dilemma?
His things are very well written.
The Doctor's Dilemma.
No, The Devil's Disciple.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the doctor's dilemma. No, it was definitely The Devil's Disciple. And as I'm looking at his list of works, I've seen a lot of them actually. But today we are talking about Pygmalion, which I remember reading in high school.
Mm-hmm.
We were saying that, if you've seen My Fair Lady, you're probably familiar with the movie. It's 3 hours long.
It's 3 hours with an intermission. It's our first movie that has an intermission.
It's so long. But Pygmalion, the play, not that long.
No. No. And the movie on Amazon that you could stream is only an hour or maybe 20 minutes and change.
I think so. Yeah. I forgot. Well, let's just talk about this story as it unfolds. I mean, it's the same plot minus the songs, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It opens. It's like an opera night or the theater is letting out. And so you see all of the kind of hoi polloi of London society, and it's raining and they're all looking for a cab. And as everybody's kind of standing in the shelter of I forget the name of the church, very famous church. We meet Eliza Doolittle, who's a flower girl selling violets, trying to sell violets to the people who are getting out of the theater. Gets into a bit of a scuffle with a man whom she thinks is a policeman who's trying to charge her, trump up charges against her, but it turns out it's a professor who is marking down her coarse way of speaking.
And we should say it's based on a Greek mythology. Pygmalion is a person that he created sculptures and he fell in love with one of his sculptures and the sculpture came to life and kind of rejected him. And so that's kind of part of the story, is that here's Professor Henry Higgins. He notices Eliza and decides, wow, your English is terrible. I could fix that and I could make people think you're a whole other person. And he went by Bernard Shaw, not George Bernard Shaw. Like he tried to chop off the George, but he still, yeah. Anyway, but he felt like it was a story about a man trying to control a woman and then she ultimately goes on her own. Versus, you know, there's different versions out there that you could see for yourself. I mean, people want a happy ending and they think sometimes the happy ending is the two people wind up together. Whereas,
right.
And Bernard Shaw was more like he wanted a more ambiguous ending, if not flat out, that in the end the person rejects him. But we should say in between, he takes her home and to his home and he's a person into phonetics and he can decide. Just you talk a couple of sentences, he could say exactly where you're from, down to the street in London. And because he has a friend who lives with him who also was in India, General Pickering. So he's like hearing English spoken with an Indian tongue versus hearing it in Britain blew his mind. George Bernard Shaw, I think because he was a socialist for a while, or that was one of his things he said he was promoting into, believed in, is that everyone should speak the same. Because if everyone then speaks the same, they're all treated the same. As long as there's no differences, which I'm sort of like, yeah, but then what about the quirky people? Like, why can't people just be themselves? But this that's not the play. The play is... He thinks
no.
That wouldn't be interesting. So he's making a play where he's basically in exchange for a fee, she can come to his home. He'll train her and basically be able to make her so that they'll think she's the Queen of Sheba, that she can speak so well that she could fool high society. She could meet royalty and they would be fooled by her. And it's a very drawn out process of, you know, her vowels and dropping her H's and learning her. It's like, you know, me talking to a person from Boston and like the way New Yorkers and Boston people talk. Who's doing it correctly? Yeah, right. And so there's this whole thing about how she was a flower girl. She's very young in the play. And she didn't know her mother. Her father basically sells her away and has really nothing to do with her. And so she's basically living a very nice life with Higgins. But he presents her to society. She fools them. And then in the end, he sort of like claps his hands like, okay, well, congratulations. Now go out in the world, find a fella. Hope you have a nice life. And he's that cold of a person. He's just not. He just kind of looks at people like they're projects. He's proud of her, but he wants her, you know, her life is supposed to be doing something else. And in the book, I'm sorry, in the play, in the movie, the person that's her potential love interest is Freddie, who doesn't have a lot of money, not very bright, but he's a catch in a way. Like she,
yeah,
you know. He's breathing. He's nice. He won't hit her. I mean, those are kind of, you know, you have to figure out where you are in the world and what year it is and what the world looks like. And Higgins figures that he could, you know, offer her enough money so that she can open a flower shop and she can be a flower. And then, but she fights back a little bit. She feels like she was used. She was being talked down to, which she was. But I think in the end, like Higgins learns something about humanity and Eliza kind of learns, you know, these new phonetic skills and that she can now be a successful flower shop person or whatever she wants.
Well, I think in the play, we're to understand that she's going to marry Freddie.
Yes.
Whatever else becomes of her. And then I forgot that there's this whole section at the end of the play, right? That Shaw, so the play like sort of ends like that, like, oh, she's probably going to marry Freddie and, you know, she'll get on with her life one way or another. And Henry Higgins has learned that maybe she might be an actual human. But then Shaw has this whole long thing after the end of the play for the reader to enjoy, basically talking about the meaning of everything that's just happened. And it's sort of like an epilogue. And he says, like, you can show this somehow on the stage or not. It's kind of up to you. And it's kind of an open-ended ending.
It's because, so this was written and staged in 1913. Very successful, but people were kind of clamoring more for, they wanted Henry and Eliza to have a clinch, you know, at the end. And so he created, so the theater director, it was very popular, but he added this happier ending to it, a love story.
Yes.
And Shaw was furious. Yes. And he's like, no, that's not the intention. And so then Shaw went back and wrote this whole ending, like Margot says. And I don't know how to pronounce the words. Galatea comes to life. That's the sculpture that I was talking about.
Galatea? I know, I'm not sure.
We're sorry, guys. But his whole point is that she emancipates herself. That's what he writes. She is now given a chance to live her own life under her own terms. And that's what we're supposed to celebrate, is Eliza. So I don't know if he was a suffragette as on top of everything, but he is thinking about this woman, you know, having agency over herself for the first time and moving on with her life. And that's why he tacked on that ending. And then Hollywood eventually, anyway, so is there anything you want to say about the basic play? I mean, there have been a lot of productions of it over the years.
Many. And it would seem that, you know, as happened, like this for the staging of it, liberties, and that one takes those liberties. And so, you know, I got the impression that, you know, just a bunch of these other things that had kind of been sucked into the canon, if you will, of Pygmalion ended up in the musical, but they're not necessarily in the play. Although a lot of it is, and a lot of the best dialogue from the original play is in the musical. Mm-hmm. But I have to say it's well written. It's funny. He attempts, like when you're reading it, he attempts to kind of phonetically spell her accent, and then he basically says, like, okay, I'm not going to do that for the rest of the play. just know she's got this accent. I mean, the characters are funny and interesting, and an examination of gender and class. Yeah, lots of things. I have to say, it's well written. It's enjoyable to read.
Yeah, and like I said, there's a version on Audible if you want to check it out for yourself. I went on YouTube. There's some productions there that you could check out. I saw this one here. It's in 87. It was Peter O'Toole and Amanda Plummer. Like, ooh, that probably was really interesting. And then there's one with Diana Rigg, which I would have been interested to see. So there's been,
I would have liked to have seen that.
Yeah. So there's been many adaptations.
Well, when we talk about the movie, we're going to move on to the movie now.
Okay, so let's just say, like, the whole just idea of Pygmalion has been co-opted into pop culture, even without My Fair Lady. You know, just the story in and of itself has been
many sitcoms.
Mm-hmm. If you go on, I was just looking at my Wikipedia page, and it's just like every sitcom, everything from Magnum P.I. to The Simpsons, The King of Queens, yes, Man from U.N.C.L.E., Beverly Hillbillies, like there's been so many people.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah, what does it say? That's Sonny resumes his high-class courtship of Ellie Mae by playing Julius Caesar and Pygmalion. I mean, I'm the Andy Griffith Show. I'm looking through this. I'm like, holy, Remington Steele? I used to love Remington Steele.
Oh, yeah. Mighty Aphrodite, by the way.
Yep.
Remember that?
Yeah. Woody Allen. That's somebody. iCarly did something. King of Queens and King of the Hill. I mean, this idea in and of itself has been co-opted into pop culture. So it really does deserve, you know, a mention there. it was made into a film, 1938. Like I said, it's on Amazon. Leslie Howard is our Henry Higgins, and I'm sorry I don't have the name of the woman who's our Eliza Doolittle. You could see it for yourself, but it's really interesting. It's a great production of the play. I wish they had higher quality film. It wasn't from Warner Brothers or anybody, like a big studio. It was like more of an independent studio. So that's why the quality isn't all that great. But if you're interested in the story, definitely check it out.
Her name is Wendy Hiller.
Wendy Hiller, thank you.
Who plays Eliza in the 1938.
And she's good.
And she was nominated for an Academy Award for that performance.
Oh, really? I wish they would do
yeah.
I wish there was a way to like to spiffy it up, because it's, I think you'll check it out.
Oh, I will. No, I definitely will.
All right. So should we talk about the movie?
Yes.
Okay. So let's play the trailer first. There was two trailers. There was one that was like, there's a bunch of them that are like 5 minutes long. This is not that. This is one. It's 1 minute long, but it gives you the basic story.
You see this creature with her curbstone English, it'll keep her in the gutter till the end of her days.
Ew, what's that you say?
In 6 months, I'll make a duchess of this draggle-tailed gutter snipe.
You expect me to get into that?
How do you do?
How do you do?
So you came here to rescue her from worse than death, eh?
Cheerio, Eliza.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
I think she's got it.
I could have danced all night. I could have danced all night. I could have danced.
So what was Pygmalion became My Fair Lady, became a musical. This had to happen for when Bernard Shaw died. Basically, he was not even going to listen to a musical. He was like, oh no, that's trash. No, he dies in 1956. This is on Broadway, and it's Rex Harrison and Julie
Andrews.
Sorry, guys. Thank you. And you can see clips on YouTube of Julie Andrews playing Eliza Doolittle. She's amazing.
Phenomenal.
So beautiful.
She's beautiful, and it's just,
she could do everything.
She's spectacular.
She can.
And she really can. She really, really can. So, wow.
Yeah.
I saw this, I'll share. I've been from our last episode, I've been on a Dick Cavett tear. Oh. There's this great, Dick Cavett is like fangirling so hard with Julie Andrews. Apparently he had in his youth in the 50s, he had gone and seen a preview of My Fair Lady up in like New Haven, and had snuck backstage to like get a glimpse of Julie Andrews. Anyway, so he asks her, like, hey, they're sitting on stage, like she's not in front of an orchestra or anything. He's like, hey, you wouldn't mind like singing us a little Eliza Doolittle, would you? And she's like, oh, sure. And she just, you're just like transported. She's like, yeah, sure, you know. And she just sings like a little bit of the song, and it's magical. It's just. And he's just flabbergasted. It's amazing. It's so great. So I'll put that clip in the Facebook group. But yeah, she was a massive stage hit. I mean, the musical has had 15 productions over the years, starting in 1956, and the most recent tour was in 2019. It is a favorite. And Margot and I were just saying before we came on the air that, you know, maybe you've never even seen this movie. I bet you know the words to some of these songs. They're such a part of our culture.
I don't know about you. My mom loved musicals. My mom played My Fair Lady like basically on a loop. When mom liked something, she would play it over and over and over again. And all these songs, I know all the beats, all the changes, but I think that's just from me. But then I talk to other people like, oh yeah, all the songs are great on My Fair Lady. There's really not a stinker. I mean, they all move the plot along, and they're fun. And they're lively, and they're earworms. They get just stuck in your head. Wouldn't it be lovely? Is like stuck in my head. Or I could have danced all night. Oh my God. That's just like the best song ever. Yeah.
I mean, there are just so many songs that I totally forgot that this is where they came from.
Yeah.
And Get Me to the Church on Time.
Oh my God. So let's talk about the casting. So it's Warner Brothers. They put a lot of money into it. It was a big deal. 1964.
Boy, yeah, they did.
That's the year my parents got married. Jack Warner, he's the producer, and George Cukor is the director. He's an amazing director. We've talked about him before. And some people really wanted Julie Andrews because she originated the part on Broadway. She's been on television many times. Believe it or not, she wasn't a big enough star for Jack Warner. And so...
No, I do believe it. She was a big stage hit.
Yes.
But people, you know, the American movie-going audience wouldn't necessarily have... You know, maybe they saw her on Ed Sullivan, like, singing one of the numbers or something. Like, they wouldn't necessarily go see this because it's a Julie Andrews movie. And like you said, they sunk a lot of dough into this thing. So I can understand them being kind of risk averse.
So they went with Audrey Hepburn. And boy, we love Audrey Hepburn. So we talk about her all the time. And here's the thing. So Rex Harrison's never been a singer. Never claimed to be a singer. Sexy Rexy. He said, I'll sing Talk This if that works for you guys. And that always worked. But the thing was, there's a couple of things. Well, he never gave the same performance twice. So there's this microphone that they put in his tie. So every time he's singing, talking, he's doing it live. And that's the take. Like, that's what you got to go with. And
it's
so,
really, I think it's great.
Yeah.
It is high tech. And I will say, I'm sorry, but he's the only person who can do that.
Yes.
He's the only person I've ever seen. I've seen other people being like, yeah, well, Rex Harrison can sing talk. I'm going to sing talk. Like, no. You cannot sing. No, that's his thing. That's his thing that he does. I don't know why it works. He's just super good at it.
He has a lot of charisma and confidence. Mean,
he does. Yeah. He just really sells it. And there is like this, like you're saying, there's this like freshness to it too. He does it as though he is spontaneously thinking those words in that moment, which I guess he kind of is. It sounds ridiculous. Like if you're like, no, it's a musical. He has many, 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 many songs. He sings none of them.
No, he's not singing. So it was using like Wi-Fi or early version of Wi-Fi just for this thing in his tie to catch his voice. Everybody else was dubbed, including Audrey Hepburn for most of the songs. There's a couple of songs, Just You Wait, yes. Rangids, that's her. And it was upsetting because there are a few people there like, I've trained for, you know, months, years, whatever, for this part. No, Warner Brothers, like we said, put a lot of money into this.
Yeah.
So they put Marty Nixon for Audrey.
And it's a great voice.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And it's believable as her voice. But, I totally get the choice. I totally get why they wanted to protect their investment. They knew people would go see it if it was Rex Harrison and Audrey Hepburn. And I think she does a good job. But I did start getting a little tired of the dubbing. But the songs are hard. Her songs are really hard.
It's a lot of
they're very difficult
soprano.
Musically.
Yes.
Yes.
It's a very high soprano
and loud and forceful.
Right.
And you know, really a lot of power there. So I get it. I totally get it. And I like.
Yeah, Margot got dropped there from the Wi-Fi gremlins. So, but you were talking about, and I feel the same way. There's sometimes where I felt a little frustration because there's so much lip syncing going on.
Yeah.
And I wish I could have, you know, I think, is it Stanley Holloway? He's the only one who plays Eliza's father. They used his actual voice. So, and that's very believable. you know, get married in the morning. All these songs. Oh my God, do they get stuck in your head?
So many songs.
It's just too many songs. So there, yeah. So he, so the whole, it's the same story. He trains her, A E I O U, the vowels. The scene where he's talking to her, and then there's like the flame, and if you to make the flame blow a little bit, if it's when you're using your H properly. Yeah.
All right, Eliza, say it again.
The Rhine in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
Didn't I say that?
No, Eliza, you didn't sigh that. You didn't even say that. Now, every night before you get into bed, where you used to say your prayers, I want you to say, the rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain 50 times. You get much further with the Lord if you learn not to offend his ears. Now for your H's. Pickering, this is going to be ghastly.
Control yourself, Higgins. Give the girl a chance.
Oh, well, I suppose we can't expect you to get it right the first time. Now, come here, Eliza, and watch closely. Now, you see that flame? Every time you pronounce the letter H correctly, the flame will waver, and every time you drop your H, the flame will remain stationary. That's how you'll know if you've done it correctly. In time, your ear will hear the difference. See it better in the mirror. Now, listen carefully. In Hartford, Hereford, and Hampshire, hurricanes hardly ever happen. Now, repeat that after me. In Hartford, Hereford, and Hampshire, hurricanes hardly ever happen.
In Hartford, Hereford, and Hampshire, hurricanes hardly ever happen.
Oh, no, 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 no. No ear at all.
Shall I do it over?
No, please. Start from the very beginning. Just do this. Go, ha, 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 ha.
Ha, 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 ha.
Go on, go on, go on.
Ha, ha. Ha.
Does the same thing hold true in India, Pickering? This peculiar habit of not only dropping a letter like the letter H, but using where it doesn't belong, like heaver instead of ever. Where is the Slavs when they learn English have a tendency to go with their G's? They say linger instead of linger. And they turn right round and say singer instead of singer. Where is the Slavs when using it where it isn't needed? They learn English and have to do it with their G's. The girl, Higgins. Go on, go on, go on, go on.
Poor Professor Higgins. Poor Professor Higgins.
I mean, it's all super amazing, but it's these performances. I mean, this Gladys Cooper as Mrs. Higgins is so funny, and she ton of an Academy Awards, by the way, we should say.
I love her.
Oh, she's wonderful. Best picture, best actor, best director, best cinematography, best art direction, best costume. The costumes in this movie, oh my God.
Spectacular. They are spectacular. The whole, my favorite scene, of course, is the Ascot scene where everybody's in black and white.
Oh, wow.
And there's a device like throughout the whole movie where they'll just sort of like freeze all the actor/dancers mm-hmm. will just freeze, and you get this whole tableau of everybody in mid action, and that, oh, it's so gorgeous. It's so beautiful. When she shows up, that's my favorite scene. I know everybody talks about when she comes down the stairs.
Yeah.
But my favorite is when she shows up at Ascot in that black and white number with the big hat. Ugh.
That's when you get a movie star, like, and she's a movie star. You need somebody that just is so like breathtaking that you want to just stare at them all day. I mean, both of those scenes, I think it was the one where she goes down the steps, you know, with the hair all up and she's going out. When she first walked out and the crew saw her, apparently you could hear a pin drop. People were just absolutely quiet and they just burst into applause because she just looks so beautiful.
She does.
She's Audrey Hepburn. I mean, it won for best sound and best music. Andre Previn was the mm-hmm. musical director of all this. Audrey Hepburn was not nominated for Eliza Doolittle. And there's been a number of productions. Only Julie Andrews and the woman who played in the movie. And there's Lauren Ambrose, who did the Lincoln Center for a year. And those were the only ones that ever been nominated for Eliza Doolittle. Eliza Doolittle is a really tough part, but I think some people gave Audrey Hepburn demerit points because they dubbed her singing voice. I think that's what's going on. It's not fair.
It's a shame. It is not fair because it's such a, I mean, it's such a huge role, and there's so much. If she weren't so great in the non-singing parts, the singing parts would not have worked at all. And I think they do work. I just get a little, you know, bit of dubbing fatigue, but I don't ever get tired of her performance.
Right.
You know, her acting performance. I never get tired of that. I think she's just wonderful when she, you know, when she comes back from the ball and she bursts into tears, or when they're talking like she's not even there. And
yeah,
the last scene at his mom's house, love her house with all the like Charles Rennie Macintosh stuff. Love it. But like that pink outfit that she's in, and the way that she's looking at him, you know, I think it's so good. It's such a great performance. It is genuinely, it's sort of like Dick Van Dyke's, you know, the criticism
Mary
of Dick
Tyler
Van Dyke.
Moore. Oh, no, Dick
in
Van
Mary
Dyke
Poppins.
Is,
no, in Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins, yeah. That's behind our Patreon wall, by the
right.
way. Yeah.
Which, okay, we all agree it's not an awesome accent, but it's such a good performance. Come
it's
on.
It's not the worst either. I mean,
no, it's not.
It's not Kevin Costner and Robin Hood. I mean, come on. He's
oh gosh,
dancing.
Yes.
Yeah,
that may be the worst.
That's the worst.
The dancing and the singing and the acting. It's really good acting. And again, so the same thing here that she's doing an amazing. I mean, this character is three dimensional. Mm-hmm. You believe that it's the same woman inside through the entire journey of the show. I think it's tremendous. I think it's very unfair. Those songs are really hard.
Yes, they are.
and you know, and again, if her acting weren't so very good, the whole movie would have crashed. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter who was singing.
Yeah.
So I agree. I think it's unfair.
Yeah. And it did super well at the box office. It came out at Christmas time in 1964. It's in AFI's list of best films of all time. It's the National Registry. It's also been a part of the culture forever. And it was in, like I said, Lincoln Center a couple of years ago, and it was making like $50 million a year. It was just doing incredible business. And then, of course, you know, Laura Benanti, who's like one of my favorite performers on Broadway, she was playing Eliza Doolittle, and I had tickets, and then the pandemic struck. And
oh no.
I know. And it's been my whole life I wanted to see My Fair Lady on stage. I'm going to. When it all comes back, that's going to be one of those things I go back to. But I have a clip in our Facebook group, and it's from Lincoln Center, and I think it's somebody in the audience who did this, but they give you the real ending, which is what George Bernard Shaw wanted them to end it with. So you could check that out there, but everything holds up. The music, the costumes, the art direction, everything. It's so beautiful. And those songs will stay in your head and they'll make you happy.
Yeah. It's just a real masterpiece. And just everything, the lighting and everything is so great. I know. And even though it's 3 hours long, you can watch it over and over again.
You really can.
I don't know why.
Right.
But I guess because they're so good and there's so many things to see each time. It's such a rich production. You know, each little background character is so well executed, and, you know, all the scenic stuff. And yeah, I just loved it. Just loved it.
And I like the decision that they made in that they just filmed it like it was theater. They didn't. I mean, some people don't like that. It's all on a soundstage, basically, is what I'm saying. They don't go out to the country or anything, but I don't mind that at all. I totally feel like I'm lucky, like I'm seeing a Broadway production up close.
Yeah, I like, you know, that you're in this heightened, stylized version of everything. And they're not, you know, and again, they're playing that up with that freeze frame thing that they do throughout the movie. Yeah, I think it works really well. But sometimes, you know, I don't know what all musicals we're going to end up doing this month, but sometimes it works out when you go on location and do it there. But I think, and sometimes things are shot in this theatrical style and it doesn't work.
Right.
But this definitely does.
I should say, by the way, Alan J. Lerner is the writer for My Fair Lady. So he's the one that adapted the George Bernard Shaw play. And he does a great job. And it's just, yeah. Also won a screenplay, the Academy Award. So yeah, it's all wonderful. I can't. So which do you like
better? Book or movie?
I know. I'm going to pick the movie.
Yeah, I have to pick the movie. Cecil Beaton. It's so good. It's so super good. Yeah, I really loved it. And it's a great 3 hours.
Yeah.
And what can you say? It's 3 hours and they don't hate it. I think it's really good. So what are we doing next?
Okay, so I'm looking into Gypsy. It's hard to get that book.
I thought it might be.
Yeah. So there was going to be a reproduction, because you and I talked about this a couple of years ago, actually, doing this book to movie. But there was supposed to be republishing the rights, but then the rights went away, and so they couldn't republish it. So I don't think Gypsy. I'll do some more research, but I don't see Gypsy. But we had a suggestion, The King and I.
Yes.
Yes, but I don't know. Also, we have Cabaret and Chicago. Oh,
yeah.
And Cats.
You know what else we haven't done?
What?
You know what else we haven't? Oh, no, we did. Did we? I don't know if we did or not. Did we ever do Mary Poppins? We did.
Yes, we did.
We did Saving Mr. Banks.
We did. We covered Mary Poppins. That's behind the Patreon wall.
But we read the book, right?
Yes.
That book is, yeah. It's not the Disney movie. Just...
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
We should also say behind our Patreon, sorry to interrupt you, behind our Patreon wall, we also have a free episode of the Grinch Who Stole Christmas. Or the Grinch, is it The Grinch Who Stole Christmas? It's The Grinch.
Yeah.
Dr. Seuss is in the news today. Margot and I talked a lot about Dr. Seuss and why some of this stuff was problematic, and that's behind our Patreon wall, but that's one of the episodes that's free. So if you want to get a little more context about his life, and perhaps why some of his material is now considered racist, not so great, maybe check that out.
Can we do Cats?
I was thinking that too. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be silly as shit. But
I haven't seen it. I mean, I saw Cats on stage in London and on Broadway. I've seen two productions of it. London was better. Yeah. And I read the poems a long time ago, but actually I saw it in that same trip that I saw Devil's Disciple. But I've not seen this movie. I think it would be fun.
Yeah. If it's available. Yeah. I'm totally in.
Well, it should be pretty easy. The book is
super easy,
as I recall.
Yeah.
Fairly easy to get our hands on. Yeah.
No, I bought the movie by accident like a year ago. So I own it. But I'd love to talk about it with you. Cats would be great.
Okay, great.
Let's do Cats.
Let's do Cats. Okay.
All right. I just mentioned our Patreon wall. We have a couple of affordable options there. We've been doing the show for 6 years, so it's everything from 2018 and then previous to that. All those shows are starting to go up there. It just helps for basic costs for the show, hosting. We're going to get a website going soon. We did the rights for a website finally, so we're going to get that up and going. Yay! But also it just helps for the hosting costs and getting the books and movies and things like that. So if you're interested, go to Patreon and look up the options there. And once again, there are some free episodes if you want to check them out for yourselves. And Margot, where can they find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com, and all of my social media callouts are at She's Not Your Mama. And where can they find you?
You can find me on social media at Brooklyn Fitchick, mostly for Twitter and Instagram. And my blog is brooklynfitchick.com. And we will be back soon with a new episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Book vs. Movie podcast. We're a part of the Electronic Media Collective. and we follow the hashtags Podern Family and Lady Pod Squad. You can find us on social media at Book Versus a Movie. You just spelled it all out for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can send us an email at bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to join our Facebook group, look for us under Book VS Movie Podcast Group in Facebook. Ask to join, and you may be lucky enough to get in. We also have a Patreon page if you want to support the show. Go to patreon.com and look for Book VS Movie Podcast. We record the show with our handy H6N, donated by those of you who are nice enough to contribute to the Patreon page. Something. Thanks so much, and we'll be back soon with a new episode. Accustomed to her face.
Above giving lessons, not him. I heard him say so. Well, I ain't come here to ask for any compliment, and if my money's not good enough, I can go elsewhere.
Good enough for what?
Good enough for you. Now you know, don't you? I'm come to have lessons, I am, and to pay for them too, make no mistake.
What is it you want, my girl?
I want to be a lady in a flower shop, instead of sitting at the corner of Tottenham Court Road. But they won't take me unless I can talk more genteel. He said he could teach me. Well, here I am, ready to pay, not asking any favour, and he treats me as if I was dirt. I know what lessons cost as well as you do, and I'm ready to pay. I won't give more than a shilling. Take it or leave it.
It's almost irresistible. She's so deliciously low, so horribly dirty. I'll take it. I'll make a duchess of this draggle-tailed guttersnipe.
I wash my face and hands before I come, I did.
Where the devil are my slippers?